Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex Retweet.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. My name is David Hockney, and today we're doing part 3 of our Undertaker series today, in which we'll discuss the Undertaker's greatest feuds and rivalries. If you're listening in, then be sure to check our other Undertaker shows, the Gimmick Matches and the Streak, which you can find on our back catalogue. Make sure you're subscribed to us on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, and all good podcasting sites. We're also on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can follow us at Suplex Retweet. If you like what you hear, give us a rating, give us a review, and yep, good for you.
Yep.
Wow.
Wow. Wow, indeed.
Yes. So anyway, let's meet today's panel. Up first is the stooge I've hired to carry around my championship until I decide to take it back. It's Scott McLeod.
The rightful champion, thank you very much. Not since my
default.
Not since Money in the Bank 2010 has somebody more deserved a world title.
You talked about Kane many chads.
Obviously.
That's all you ever talk about.
Just watching your intro think, how did I ever lose to you?
And yet you still did.
Number 43.
Anyway, up next is a man who's preparing his liver for the main event of ESSR TakeOver Amsterdam this weekend. He is the Scottish Big Dog. It's Alan McLucas.
All right, mate. How's it going?
Good to have you on board. How are you feeling this week?
Oh, it's going to be epic. Dave's going in the canal.
No, I'm not going any canal. Scott's the favourite, apparently.
You're second.
Well, I wouldn't bet against the favourite.
Might as well call you Rosie and Jim because you'll be a barge going in that canal.
Oh!
Fucking
hell. That was loud, that. Sorry, I think my hack's out.
Oh, for God's sake, not even 5 minutes in, we've got a Rosie and Jim reference.
The show becomes more of a farce every week.
God. Take two!
Definitely insulted by using Rosie and Jim.
I don't think it was a great idea to do this in a library. There's just a lot of people just look over.
There's people writing essays just through the wall, you know?
Right. Up next, he is the last outlaw of the Glasgow Uni Pro Wrestling Society with a still a horrible taste in fashion sense. It's Andy Mitchell.
What's that? You just jealous of my turtleneck. That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly, but...
What's wrong with a turtleneck?
You're wearing a beanie indoors.
Yeah, because... I've got no hair. Yeah, I've got to take it off now.
Excuse me, he takes it off, he looks a bit like Lars Sullivan with the bald head and the beard.
Steve,
I was going for more like, you know, Triple H look.
Steve Austin had no hair and he won 3 Royal Rumbles.
He did. And he had good fashion sense.
But Rock has
what are you on about? You're wearing some crappy Under Armour shirt and you don't even look out.
Dwayne Johnson has no hair and he's the world's biggest star.
That's true.
And finally, we have the founder of the Ministry of Darkness, otherwise known as Roscoe. It's Ross McLeod.
The Ministry of Darkness is Dave's flat when he turns off the lecky at night.
He's not wrong.
I want it back.
The only man I've ever seen unplug the cloaks and fridge before he goes to bed.
The PS4 needs a rest.
And of course, we wouldn't have our excellent show without our MVEP. He is a man who digs holes, takes souls, but still won't get on that pole. It's Kwaku Ajay.
That was actually really good.
I know.
How you doing, Kwaku?
Yeah! that's actually quite good. I'll give you that one.
Yeah, Dave, bother.
I'll give you that.
Well, alright. So today we're talking about Undertaker's greatest rivalries, and we're going to start off going to the mid-90s, where we did have a few first evers with this feud. It's Mankind. So just to kick things off, their initial encounter began at King of the Ring 1996, and they feuded for most of the late 90s. Andy, I'll start with you in this one. What did you think of the Undertaker-Mankind feud? Because there was a lot of defining moments that sort of led the way with brutal matches and stuff.
Yeah, because it was Mankind's... All right. It was Mankind's debut feud, wasn't it? So he just appeared the night after WrestleMania.
Yep.
Looking back at it, it was just really intense. Probably his most intense feud on this. And, you know, before that, Undertaker didn't really put on great matches. And I think this might have been, like, the first time it was, like, you know, it was a legit, you could tell he was a legit wrestler and someone that you shouldn't mess with or else he'll make you famous.
Mankind definitely had that sort of demented look about him that only a guy like Undertaker would feud with. And Ross, do you think Undertaker could have feuded with any of other Mick Foley's personalities like Cactus Jack or Dude Love? Or do you think Mankind was sort of the best one?
Dude Love, I think, would have worked well with the Biker Taker, but I think this is the only character at this stage would have worked with the Undertaker, and I think obviously Mick Foley just came into WWE at this point. It was good for Mick Foley to get a big push against the Undertaker, and it was also good for Undertaker to get like a monster of the week that could actually wrestle, because you see a lot in the early 90s, and you see it, obviously we'll talk about his rivalry with Batista later, before that, his sort of feuds were monster of the week, big guy of the week, oh, we're bringing in this big guy and it's got to be, he'll dominate Taker. And have you ever seen anyone dominate Taker? Yeah, the last big guy you brought in. But this works well because Mankind's unhinged and Taker's gimmick was sort of like mind games. He sort of just thrived on these mind games, sort of like you see with Nikki Cross now, like the Asuka thing and the Shayna Baszler thing, everyone was intimidated by them. She sort of pounced on it, and that's sort of how Mankind was in that feud.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to describe it. I think obviously having that unhinged sort of personality, it sort of makes you think, like, you know, the mind games are not going to be as effective, but
yeah.
Obviously Taker was very skilled in the ring as well. And Alan, with this feud, I said in the sort of opening segue, there were a couple of first evers. You know, they had the first ever
historic,
yep, first ever Boiler Room Brawl and the first ever Buried Alive match. Which of these do you think these sort of set a precedence for what the Attitude Era was like?
Absolutely, exactly. To the words of mouth, it set the tone for the Attitude Era. You know, the Buried Alive matches had that many of them. It was way ahead of its time. It's something I miss, actually. I wish we'd do more of. We're too PG now. The Boiler Room, you know, like Taker's recently went back to the Boiler Room in his last segment with Kane. We talk about back to Crown Jewel and stuff like that. So it kind of brings back the whole ethos and the era of him and Mankind. I thought it was tremendous. I think it's one of his best, absolutely.
Scott, what did you make of the Buried Alive match?
I'm kind of one of these people that's kind of glad we don't have this anymore, because as a spectacle and as a concept, it suits it. But if you ever try to watch a Buried Alive match, it's just a bunch of two guys wrestling in the dirt for 10 minutes. If you think about it.
Yeah, it does sound a bit weird.
It's the same as Govan. It's no difference.
See, I think the thing with a Buried Alive match, it should be like the Boiler Room Brawl. It should start backstage, because what's the point in having it start in the ring? Because you need to walk, but it's like the infamous scene in Only Fools and Horses where Trigger's offered a lift to the pub.
That's not your first Only Fools and Horses references on this show.
He has to walk by the pub to go for Dale to give him a lift back to the pub. And his logic is, but Dale said he'd give me a lift. But yeah, they walk by where they're going to be buried. Like, surely whoever makes their entrance first, surely whoever's coming at second can run out and just kind of push them and run like one. It's a weird concept of a match.
Yeah, it's like, same with the, I don't know how many of you have erased this from your memory, but you remember the House of Horrors match from Backlash last year?
Two years ago.
Like, did that ever remind you of the Boiler Room Brawl at all, or do you think it was just a completely messed up?
A straight to DVD sequel of the Boiler Room Brawl, perhaps.
Sounds about right, actually, yeah. But of course we can't talk about Undertaker and Mankind without talking about that Hell in a Cell match, the one from King of the Ring 1998. It's probably one of the most replayed clips of how dangerous Hell in a Cell is meant to be. Andy, what did you think Like, what was it about that Hell in a Cell that really made it stand out?
It was the fact that they like started the match on top of the cell, and it was the plan that before was they wanted to go bigger than the Shawn Michaels one, so that was like a 5-star classic.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they decided, and it's just to see them fighting on top of the cell, and it's just, you know, dangerous. And you've already seen matches where it's intense, and it's like how intense are going to go, and then as we all know, Mankind gets thrown off the cell. And I know a lot of attention does go on like Mick Foley's fall, but it's just like Taker just standing there just looking like the monster that he's supposed to be, and it's just an amazing image.
Yeah. Ross, that fall from Mankind, how did he not die?
I don't know. It sort of put me on the spot there. Like, how are you alive?
He is a bit of a cushion man, so you know.
Yeah. Oh, careful.
He had a bit of padding, trailers. But as...
That was just a table.
As Simon Cassidy said in his recent brilliant interview with our own Alan McLucas,
yeah,
where he mentions that match and how that fall is so... It's so shocking. It was something you'd never seen at the time. The match itself was kind of...
Mm-hmm.
It's no great to watch, but that moment there, it's just, oh my god, like how did he not die? that was his example. How did he not die?
Yeah, it wasn't just that as well, Scott, because remember he was also chokeslammed in the cell as well, and the ring didn't even give way, because I've seen him like take a back body drop through the cell when he had a match with Triple H, and the ring practically dented. So
yeah,
do you think that was... That was at a point where you think, right, this has gone on too far.
Yeah, I think if they had stopped the match there, I mean, some people may have been disappointed, but I think you could understand why they had to do it. But I think as iconic as this match was, it did set a really far, the precedent for Hell in a Cell far too high, because Mick Foley said, like, he knew when he had the match with Triple H, he knew the crowd didn't care for the first half of the match. They were just waiting to see when they would eventually go out. And when they did, that's when people started picking up, because they were wanting to know what was going to happen.
Like, what was going to be the big spot, yeah?
It's sort of like a Shane McMahon thing. It's like, right, when is he going to jump off something high?
When is he going to do like a...
Yeah. Enough of your crappy MMA punches, just jump off something.
Yeah, can you imagine like if Shane McMahon was at WrestleMania 28? You're just like, no one cares. Climb the pine tree. Jump. Jump.
Alan, do you think this match sort of set the tone for... Attitude Era, not only for Attitude Era feuds, but for the Hell in a Cell match. Gerald, do you think these guys sort of defined how brutal it was?
Yeah, I mean, we've never had one as shocking. It still takes a breath with thinking about it, and you're seeing Simon, it's like, how did he survive? And also the fact that everything happened, it was a mistake. You know, he was never meant to go off the cell, he was never meant to go through the cell.
No. He was meant to get thrown off the cell. He was meant to go through.
He was
supposed to be halfway up and fall. Like, what are
they? I heard when he goes through the cell and chokeslam him, he would land, it would slightly give way, and he would roll down, but it just immediately gave way like underneath him. Mm-hmm. And then that's why it went down in the chair. He also falls down and lands on his head, which causes even more damage.
No, even just hearing about all this, it just sounds really horrible. But yeah, I actually do have some stats here. I've got stats for all of these... all of these rivals that we'll be discussing today.
Because rules help control the fun.
Exactly.
Okay, Monica.
Yeah, but in total, Undertaker and Mankind had 10 one-on-one matches, and Undertaker won 6 of them. So it's a 6-4 in favour of Taker. So it was kind of like even the odds, because obviously Mankind won the Boiler Room Brawl, but then Taker wins Hell in a Cell. It was kind of back and forth, but... I think the really sort of sad thing about this feud is the last two matches they had, those ended in disqualification and countout.
They were saying they should have really done their like grudge match at WrestleMania. That would have been a hell of a WrestleMania match, but...
Yeah. But then it just sort of just died when the Attitude Era sort of was starting to round up a bit.
I was just saying there was too much going on at the Attitude Era, so it was just just fit it in when we
could. I think the Attitude Era was so loaded, like, you could just look anywhere and you'd find something good about it in terms of future storylines.
I think that's something that was good about the Attitude Era, though, because we always talk about how great it is, but then we can always talk about so many matches that never happened.
Mm-hmm. Always talking about, like, it goes to show how good the Mankind held his own in that feud, even though that he won, like, it was more in favour of Taker in terms of wins and losses. Shows how much Mankind contributed to this, and that everybody talks about how much mind games he helped play on the other day and how he got those first two big victories. So it just goes to show you don't need to win every match, but it's how you win. Mm-hmm. Then, like the moment at SummerSlam, like I remember that surely for the Paul Bearer turn, almost like Paul Heyman for some reason.
But yeah, that's so that's our sort of first feud. That's Mankind sort of done and dusted a bit. So moving on to our next one, someone who's still around on the roster, but just not as much an active competitive anymore. Triple H.
Regain.
Well, he's not. If you choose to forget his last couple of matches, which I do.
No, yeah, but unfortunately we are going to bring them up. So
why must you torture us?
Yeah, now Undertaker and Triple H have had a couple of one-on-one matches before their sort of first big spectacle clash, which is WrestleMania X7. Their sort of first Mania encounter, and that was...
That was their very first match. They never wrestled before that.
No, I think they wrestled a couple of times. It's like,
Random match on a shotgun Saturday night in a train station where Undertaker tombstones him on top of an escalator or something like that.
I remember it.
The 90s.
Yeah. Now, obviously, people say WrestleMania X7 was one of the better WrestleManias of all time.
Best WrestleMania of all time.
How do you see it as a Rock fan?
He's an Austin fan. Look at him. Just look at him.
Rock lost. It's a terrible WrestleMania.
Yeah, it's the greatest. It's the WrestleMania that Vince McMahon turned face.
Well, 18 to make Rock won.
Rock may have lost, but let's not forget, Kane did win the hardcore title.
He did win the hardcore title.
I'm going to disagree with Alan there. That massive dive of a 7-foot man in red spandex diving off a stage onto another 7-foot man was glorious.
Just imagine being Raven, seeing that flying towards you.
Raven nearly killed that shot.
Yeah, that was one of the last matches to take place at that year's Mania. Do you think it sort of and it was quite a long match, so because they were sort of went in the crowd, there was some, I didn't even know if it was a no disqualification step.
No, it wasn't. It was just the longest ref bump of all time. Just one punch and
the ref was in a coma.
It was legit.
Was it Mike Kyoto?
I think so.
Always over ourselves. Yeah, always. Yeah.
But do you think this was sort of a good start for what was going to be the first of their three WrestleMania matches? Ross, I'll start with you.
It's a good Mania match, but the feud itself is sort of just, they had nothing to do at WrestleMania. Like, that WrestleMania is great, but you look at a lot of the feuds are thrown together because so much energy goes into the Rock Austin. This was just sort of like, right, Triple H is feuding with Austin, but he can't feud for Austin for long because he's got to feud with Rock. Undertaker was sort of just floating about, I think.
He was tag teaming McCain.
And
then it's like, yeah, because going into it, I know like a lot of people were unhappy. You had like Angle, who was unhappy, and he just had the title. Mm-hmm. Triple H was unhappy, and maybe Undertaker was unhappy.
Yeah, and I think they just kind of threw them together to appease him. I think they gave Kurt Angle Benoit to appease him.
Mm-hmm. That was actually rated one of the best matches.
That was a great match. I think a lot of them had a lot to prove. This match is good, but it's just, it goes a bit long.
It is a bit of a slugfest.
It's a bit of a slugfest, and the one spot that, when you watch back now in HD, you can actually see he doesn't actually touch him with it, but watching it on my dodgy VHS copy that had been taped off Sky, it's the bit where he goes for the power, the last ride, and Triple H picks up the sledgehammer, and as he lifts him up, he just goes bang. Watching that in a VHS copy in non-HD, it looks like he's absolutely scudded him in the head with a sledgehammer. It's like, oh Jesus, that bit's amazing.
Is that the only good spot of the match?
That's amazing. Fighting in the crowd, watching it as a child, I like to give the opinion of when you watched it. I thought it was pretty cool because like the setup and all that looked like another ring. And it was like, oh, that's pretty cool, but it's one that doesn't hold up.
See, they had a couple of other sort of encounters as well. Like they had a few clashes on Raw. It was over number one contenderships. Mm-hmm. They faced each other at Insurrection, the UK pay-per-view at Wembley Arena. But there was actually a 9-year gap between their...
No, they fought King of the Ring 2002 as well.
Yeah,
I think they knew it was going to be bad because they were doing house shows and they weren't well received.
Yeah.
And it was that bad that they brought The Rock out to do commentary and caused a screwy finish.
Yeah, but their sort of last sort of match on Raw was 26th of August 2002. There would be a 9-year gap before they faced each other again at WrestleMania 27. And that was the No Holds Barred match. So
they were in a three stages of a tag match in Madison Square Garden 2009 on Raw.
I think
he's talking about
Mr. Stats Man.
They were on because Triple H got drafted to SmackDown, but Undertaker never left SmackDown.
No, he was on Raw, wasn't he? No,
Oh no, he was on Raw like the first bit of the draft, but then he went to SmackDown and like never left until like the part-time sort of Taker stuff.
I was going to say, before you go off WrestleMania, just we're talking about Undertaker, the best moment of that is just when he comes down the bloody ramp and the motorbike.
Yes.
I just have to mention that.
That was sort of just the base of that feud. It was sort of like, he stole his bike, so he went to steal it back.
Triple H stole my bike.
Yeah, he went to steal it back, and then he got arrested for stealing his own bike back. He said... Oh, that was a good bit. He goes like to the cops.
And he did smash his limo though.
Do you think we can stop and get some donuts? That's the best thing he says to the cops. But then it was just
great American accent.
You can get away with any form of stereotyping.
Yeah, it was a thrown together feud, but they sort of kept him apart the 2 years Triple H were on SmackDown as well, which
was actually pretty impressive the way they did that.
It was impressive considering you'd seen the roster at the time. It was horrendous.
Yeah, but they wouldn't face each other again until WrestleMania 27, the No Holds Barred match. Mm-hmm. Do you think? And this was probably the only decent match on what was a pretty bad WrestleMania.
I think it's the only great match. The Punk against Randy Orton match is really good, but it's the only great. It's the only Mania worthy match. If you get me.
Yeah.
I actually thought the Orio Edge was actually decent.
From a technical standpoint, I think that was actually
Because I don't mean you think back now. I mean, that was Edge's last.
No, I never actually watched that Mania because it was just like.
Do you guys remember how that No Holds Barred match actually came about?
Yeah, they just kind of looked at the... This was the point to sign Buff kind of thing.
This is what made this match so intriguing. The fact that Taker's coming out, running his gob, blabbing his gob away, going, I've beaten everyone, there's none left today. And then Triple H comes out, doesn't he speak a single word, stares at him, and then just looks past him at the rest of the match. And the two of them turn around, and that's it. No. And that's the moment you go... Holy shit,
I'm pretty sure Taker came out and wasn't saying anything, and then Triple H came out and he didn't say anything, and then he came out.
Did he come out flapping his gums?
No, he didn't say anything at all.
Neither of them said a word. Yeah, it was. I think Taker had come back after the Bragging Rights Buried Alive match, and then Triple H had come back from injury, and then they just sort of. So it was two returns for the price of one.
Because they thought it was Sting coming in, because they didn't actually.
Oh yeah.
Because
yeah.
it was the whole was it Johnny Cash video package.
They were trying to sign Sting at the time, but he chose to be signed with TNA.
Right, they tried to sign Sting, as you guys are saying. Then when they couldn't get Sting, it was very obvious it was the Undertaker, and I think they actually gave it away at the start of Raw. Because they showed the countdown, and it was a 3 hour, it was a special 3 hour Raw before we did weekly 3 hour Raw, and it was like, it was the date, so it was like 2:23, and they were like 2 hours 23 minutes in, this is going to happen, and then the thunder claps, and the Undertaker appears, and then disappears again. You're like, so you've just told us at 2 hours 23, and I think that's what made the Triple H one even better, because it's just like, right, it's the Undertaker, fair enough, who's he fighting out? Boom! Time to play the game.
I remember, I remember watching that. I jumped out of my seat when I heard Motorhead play.
It's like, they've both been away for so long. Like, Taker comes back after being buried alive, then, like, we don't need an explanation why he's back. He's the Undertaker, he's just here.
Yep.
But, like, kind of similar to Mania 17, where they'd only faced off once or twice. Be a man.
Just grab another
faced off once or twice, but now that big match, and it seems obvious, like, why isn't this match on Mania 17? It's kind of thing, like, they had been done such a good job of keeping them apart that it felt like. It felt like so long since they'd faced off that when they had the face off, you were like, yes, this is a match I want to see at WrestleMania.
I do love how the promo package is like, the last outlaw. I was like, why the outlaws?
I know.
Because like, from the Attitude Era.
Undertaker 1 week, it came up, the game, Triple H, the last outlaw, the Undertaker, like, since when has he been called that?
But yeah, that wasn't their last encounter, because they faced a year later inside the now infamous End of an Era Hell in a Cell.
You need to talk about how that match ended first before we move on.
That's my all-time favourite match ever.
Like Hell in a Cell?
Oh my god.
Sorry, Andy, you were going to say something about No Holds
Barred. No, just saying, you can't like go on to that without how it ends. But, like, Taker like obviously wins, but he can't go to his feet, and he has to get stretched out of the way.
That's right, yeah, Triple H was the one walking out, even though he sort of passed out. Yeah. But yeah, so End of an Era, Hell in a Cell. Alan, you said this is your favourite match. What made it so special?
I think it's the first time you legitimately thought streak's gone. Michaels is the special guest referee, and Hell in a Cell, they're going hit hammer and tongs, and in the next thing, Taker's hit with sweet chin music, and as he spins into the pedigree, and I remember exactly this. I was in Walkabout with my pals from uni, and my pal time goes, streak's over, and I'm like, no, it's not, never end. And we're one. Two, and he jumps up like that, and the next thing Taker kicks up, and I kid you not, I think I had a stroke. I was like, he's not, and that was it. And it's just, it's a WrestleMania match. It had everything. You know, you had the storytelling, you had the action. Both of them looked on point, because a lot of people thought after 27 Taker was done, he was weak, he was fragile, he can't do it anymore, but he came back and he showed, no, I can do it, and I've still got it. And oh, it was just, it's probably, I think, honestly, I'll argue this, right? I think it was actually, up until last year's WrestleMania, it was the best WrestleMania match since last year's WrestleMania. Mm. I haven't seen another match at any other WrestleMania since that's touched it.
I mean, the story going into it is really good. Mm-hmm. If you choose to forget that awful wig Taker was wearing on Raw, to reveal that he was bald until Mania. And yeah. Just, I didn't realize his wig until someone pointed it, and once you notice it, you can't not notice it.
Well, he sort of wore a hood after wearing the wig, you know, he had the hat, then he had the hood to sort of hide it. But, yeah, going past end of an era, we get to last time ever at...
I'm sorry, Dan, I'll get a...
Sorry, do you guys want to talk
about it? Yeah, well, it would be lovely. Uh-huh. I had a wee bit of a gripe with this, with the fact that it said end of an era, and it was like all the Attitude Era guys, and you're just like, right, on this card already, Chris Jericho's wrestled, Kane's wrestled, The Rock's in the main event, and then the next night Brock Lesnar returns, you're just like, not the end of an era. Like, they're all still there. And like, if it was the end of the era, surely the loser retires. They were both in prominent matches the next year's WrestleMania.
Ridiculous. I know. Like, and also, like, I think this match and the Rock match, I remember when we were watching it, that these are the two matches I was most invested in, because you could easily see either one of them going either way, and, like, there's never been, like, a better near fall in Taker's Street than that switching in the pedigree. And clearly, you know, titles of matches don't mean anything if you go from end of an era to last time ever.
Before we go, obviously, like, yeah. I'm a massive Rock fan, so I was massively invested in Rock Cena. But I think a lot of people, and rightfully so, because they kind of sacrificed one Mania to build to another Mania, weren't interested in it. I think this was, like, it was 50-50, and this got the other half on board. It's like, right, for those of you that don't want to watch the Rock Cena, we have a Hell in a Cell match, we have Triple H Undertaker, and we have the rematch, which I thought, great.
Well, you can't say no to Hell in a Cell, can you?
Exactly.
Especially when you get two guys who are basically at the end of their sort of tether, and you think maybe the streak's going to come to an end. I think that was brilliant. But just to sort of quickly, before we move on, let's discuss last time ever, Super Showdown and Crown Jewel. I mean, bad. Anything good can be said? Can we say anything good about this?
No.
No. Next.
No.
All right, next. Cool. Right. Up next, we go to from one Evolution member to another. Up next is Batista.
Batista.
Yep. Now, this was sort of the main prominent feud of 2007, because this was the year Undertaker won the Royal Rumble, and he would go on to face Batista at WrestleMania that year for the World Heavyweight Championship. Andy, I'll start with you on this one. What did you think of this this Royal Rumble winners feud build up to WrestleMania? Was it good, or was it...
Well, I was excited about it. I remember it because it was like they were doing the sort of we're friends kind of thing. It's like, you know, I don't really want to face you, Taker, but, you know, I'll have to. And they had the tag team match where it was Taker and Batista against Michaels and...
Cena.
And then during the match, Batista turns on Taker and is like, alright, now it's on. This is going to be like... Because you wanted them to be intense. And when that match started, it was like straight away, they just go straight at it. And I was like, right now, man. I can't even remember how it ends. I just remember how it starts. It's just like, just before it's like, I think it's Taker just takes off his hat and it's before it, like, Batista just runs in and smacks him right in the face.
See, with this one as well, I think this is another one because Batista was Vince's guy. Before Cena was Vince's guy, Batista was Vince's guy. Mm-hmm. And Undertaker, since he hadn't won the title since 2002, you look at Undertaker's title reigns, he had, I believe, three or four in the later half of his career, and it was sort of like that was the only time he ever really won titles. He'd lost all the title feuds he was in. He always won his normal feuds, but his title feuds he lost, and we were sitting thinking, like, is this the moment? And I think this match is important as well, because David Campbell mentioned it on the Best and Worst Rumble Winner Show. Undertaker was sort of back to Villain of the Week or Scary Guy of the Week or Monster of the Week. This Rumble was the sort of the prefaces and the kickoff from WrestleMania 23 up until WrestleMania 29, where Undertaker's match every year was absolutely immense, and all these feuds, like as we'll talk about when we go to Edge and that, all these feuds were amazing. All these feuds felt like a big deal again, and I think this match helped it. And like Andy says, when the bell rings and they just go for it, because it's no two guys you expect to go for it. It's two big, powerful guys. You don't expect them to be running at 100 miles an hour and forcing the crowd to catch their breath.
It's like I said, like, not a lot of people sort of, I know a lot of people don't talk of that as a big Screech match, but when they talk about, like, I remember, like, they were talking about Randy Orton versus Triple H, and it was like they compare that in the same way that start, like, that match did.
Yeah.
So it's like, I know it's not remembered as, like, greatest things, but it's always, like, kind of the intensity it should, like, really get remembered.
See, I think I don't think they sort of put that much sort of focus. Well, they didn't go over the top with Batista Undertaker at first, which I think maybe that's what made it good. They didn't put too much investment into it, and it just sort of naturally panned out. So I think that's what made it good. Now, Scott, following their WrestleMania feud, they would actually go on to have quite a long series of matches, including Last Man Standing and Steel Cages.
Yeah.
Do you remember watching them?
I do remember the Last Man Standing match, because I had it on the pay-per-view on DVD for a while, and just remember how it ends. Like, they clearly wanted to keep it going. They had to think, how do we keep going and keep both men strong? What do we do? Let's have them kill each other by going off the stage and possibly blowing themselves up.
Yeah, that was, I think, Batista's fear to take her off the stage.
Off the stage, yeah.
And then the scaffolding fell on them.
Yeah.
I mean, that with that kind of match, you can get away with, like, a double count-out in a Last Man Standing. Mm-hmm. But the Steel Cage match, Alan, I don't know if... No, you've not seen it.
I think the
this was Alan's absence. We all had an absence.
Yeah,
during my time, I didn't have Sky Sports.
So,
like, Steel Cage is the one.
You remember the Steel Cage? Yeah, that was a bit of an odd one, because they were supposed to sort of hit the floor at the same time, but I think it was Batista actually technically hit first, but it was the camera angles they messed with it to make it look like they hit at the same time.
Yeah, obviously this was back when SmackDown was pre-taped, so that stuff was like, doesn't matter. This sort of led to Mark Henry. I want to preface this. Mark Henry Hall of Pain, Mark Henry Salmon Jacket, John Cena feud 2013 is great. Mark Henry at this point was awful. I'm sorry, it was just, he lost a lot of weight to do the Hall of Pain stuff.
Yeah.
I think at this point he was sort of lumbering, he was carrying too much weight. It's like when you see parts of the Big Show's career when he's heavy, he's no as good as you know he can be.
Mm.
And this was just starting off another villain of the week, which was sort of, like we talk about, all his feuds were good. This sort of led to the Taker hiatus, where he would do Rumble to Mania, take the summer off, and then he would do, you know, like SummerSlam to like the November pay-per-view, take December off, and then do the Rumble again. And this just sort of wrote Taker off TV, and to be honest, I wasn't a fan of it.
Yeah. And it sort of intertwines with Edge a bit as well, who we'll discuss just next. But I think because of that, because Edge had to leave because of injury as well, so that sort of reignited the feud between Batista and Taker. They had a couple more matches to round off the end of 2007. Scott, there was a, they even had a Hell in a Cell match at the Survivor Series that year. What did you make of that match?
I haven't actually seen that match, but I heard it's great. But I do know that match came about because it's Cyber Sunday. Batista randomly just beats the Undertaker, and Austin with the fan voided ref, and like it's just a standard match. Like Austin didn't get involved on the match. Batista won clean, and then Taker just went, I want another match. Like, really? Well, the Keeper Batista just sort of went, no. Back of the line.
No, like, I beat you fair and square.
Yeah. Right, but they did have a great finish. I did see the finish where Edge snuck in to save the camera, and that would set up a triple threat between the two.
Edge sneaking in as a cameraman in the Hell in a Cell, that was actually pretty clever.
Yeah.
But I think there is maybe a reason why Batista won at Cyber Sunday. It's because it was held in Washington, D.C.
Alright.
Batista's hometown. So maybe they just didn't want a negative hometown.
It's before everybody lost in their hometown.
Yeah, this is way before then. But yeah, I think the really good thing about this feud is that they had seven matches, all within 2007, and believe it or not, they were all for the World Heavyweight Championship, one-on-one. So it was purely around the world title, and I think that's how you really build a great feud when you're with two big stars like these guys. But sort of going on to the sort of last point, they just had the next 1v1 match they would have wouldn't be until 2009, which would be the chairs match. Is this one really worth mentioning? Because it was almost seemed like a one-off in a way.
No, really. the would you call it the they took in some really good matches in that time. Batista was actually involved in one. It was the Fatal 4-Way at Bragging Rights 2009 with Mysterio and Punk. That was a great match. He has a great Elimination Chamber match where he loses it to Jericho. He has a great match at the Royal Rumble. This just sort of felt weird. It's a chairs match. This has not been done since, because like there's been low blows and underhanded deeds and tables and ladders used in chairs matches since. But it was like Batista wins with a low blow. He low blows him. Batista bombs him onto a chair. Teddy Long comes out, who's screwed the Undertaker 4 months prior, to tell Batista, oh, chairs are the only legal thing in the match. It's a normal match. Disqualifications count. Like, really?
What? No, it doesn't.
Yeah, and that's how the match restarted. And then he literally...
So stupid as well.
It was such a heel way for him to win, because Taker gets up as Batista's protesting, rightfully so. What a stupid decision. And then he just scalps him with a chair in the back, and then I think he tombstones him onto the chair, and then that's it.
Hold on, player. It could have been worse. He could have just came out and went, we're going to have a tag team match.
Like, battle royal.
Like, the only reason you have a table and a chair each as your tag team partners.
You're going to have a rematch with The Undertaker.
I just fought The Undertaker. Like, the only reason Batista was there in this match, I think, because he just freshly turned heel, turning on Rey Mysterio after that four-way. And they just wanted... I think he was just kind of out on his way out the door. They had one foot out the door because he was kind of done at this point. You could tell.
Yeah, he sounded like he was getting sick of the whole PG thing, but he was, you know, like you said, he was he became a heel.
Apparently that's not why he left. Did you see the reason why he left? Although, in fairness, when you see his career now, he's probably...
Is that because there's no real men about?
No, it was...
That's a verbatim quote by Batista.
He was also promised a WWE movie.
Ah.
And he was promised the classic Triple H award-winning comedy, The Chaperone. And at the last minute, they replaced him with Triple H. And that was sort of like the straw that broke the camel's back. And he just went, and fair play to him, he did it. He went, you know what, I don't need your films. I'll go out and make it my own.
And Blackjack and Hookers.
A Futurama quote makes it on ESSR.
Yeah.
And fair play, he's in James Bond, he's in The Avengers, he's in Guardians of the Galaxy. He's done
brilliant.
It.
He's brilliant as Drax the Destroyer.
He's so good.
Some people are saying he's like got a much better Hollywood career than The Rock.
I think he's not a leading man.
Yeah, but The Rock's movies are rubbish, no offense.
No. I think The Rock, we can get into this another time. Yeah, four Rock
just
shows
wait, Black Adam comes out and you're all going to be slow.
Right, let's discuss movies another time. So, but yeah, we did mention this next person. He was sort of just weaved his way in between the Undertaker Batista feud. Edge. So
we all thought we knew him.
Yeah, he comes in, you know, with the sort of.
Wow, Scott.
I know. I was in there. I had to do it.
He's the first superstar, I think, to have two surprise cash ins because he has, you know, he does first one at New Year's Revolution and he does it again on SmackDown, even though he was a Raw superstar beforehand. So I think seeing that cash in on Taker was sort of like the last thing you'd expect. But then again, they wouldn't have another match 1v1 until WrestleMania 24. Do you think this sort of that cash in really planted the seeds for a WrestleMania type match?
So the best thing about Edge here is. So obviously he does the cash-in, he avoids having to face The Undertaker properly. He hits him with the camera, and he keeps the title on Batista. He does the triple threat, he doesn't have to fight Batista or Undertaker one-on-one, he can just wait for them to take each other out. Sandy drops his phone.
Sound like Tom broke in my pocket.
And he avoids, and this plays into the ultimate opportunist, because in 2008, he's fighting... the likes of Rey Mysterio building up to this, and obviously Rey Mysterio being the smaller guy, it gives Edge the advantage. So the entire year he's avoided the Undertaker's size and power advantage, and then when Taker wins the chamber to go, it's like there's no avoiding him now. It's like he's coming for you. You've avoided him for nearly a year, and it's so well, it's like Tommaso Ciampa's injury helped the Johnny Gargano storyline.
Yeah.
Edge's injury helped the Undertaker storyline so much. And it's just a case of he's avoided him at every turn. He's played up the ultimate opportunist, but it's like the Reaper always comes, and at WrestleMania he
like he always gets the upper hand on him.
So it's a good storyline going into it as well. Like you said about the ultimate opportunist, because that is just Edge's character. So it's just like, I'm going to win, but I'm just going to do it like in the worst way possible.
Yeah, it's like I don't have to like beat you in the ring. Yeah. I just have to outsmart you.
Also, as well, like this rivalry kind of set up the streak thing at WrestleMania, because it was streak versus streak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because if I remember, Edge was at 8-0.
Well, he didn't win
the Money in the Bank the year.
He'd never been pinned at Mania.
There's a streak. That's the first time you really got heard of it. I think it was 8-0 or something like that.
No, I think it was like four, five, and oh, seven.
That's quite a lot.
8 or 7. He'd done quite a few.
2000, 2001, 2002, 2000.
He wasn't around for
8-5, yeah.
2006,
it was 5. It was 5 because he won the triangle tables match. He won the
tables
ladder. So he won the TLC. He He beat Booker T. He won the Money in the Bank, and then who did he beat in 2006?
Mick Foley.
In 2006.
That's the thing.
Did he not wrestle in 2003? Many as I know, he was in
2007. He was in the ladder match, but he didn't.
He broke his neck right before 19. He was still out for 20, and then he came back in the draft about a month later.
But yeah, like saying, it's the streak versus streak. It set the whole streak thing for me as well. But also, great match as well. You know, really good match.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel Edge should have won it.
The greatest Charles Robinson moment where he runs the massive WrestleMania novelty ramp. Like, everyone always worries, like, how are they going to get down that? Oh, he went down it like a thing. Linford Christie had nothing on that boy, Charles Robinson, as he sprints to the ring and slides and manages to stop right in the middle of the ring where Edge is currently covering Taker. One, two.
You must have rehearsed that.
Oh, they must have.
It wasn't just like the sort of main ramp they had as well. Like, Mania 33 was the same arena.
It's deep as well.
Just one giant HD ramp as well. Can you imagine him running down that?
Imagine he's got his stomach and slide down.
Oh, God.
Like, the thing with Edge was...
Put cooking oil on the ramp or something, you just slide down.
Despite, like, cashing into him that moment, it did feel like a kind of stop-start with him, where he won the title, but held it for, like, a month, then one beat Mick Foley and won the title back, and then he lost a few months later to Cena. Then he won the cash in on Taker, but then got injured. I feel like this Mania match and the feud that preceded it is where Edge truly arrived as the main event guy, especially on SmackDown, because they needed guys like that.
Yeah,
they had Taker and Batista for a while, and was through feuding with those two that Edge kind of became that guy as well. But Edge actually did say in an interview, I believe it was on Jericho's show years later, he was off. He said at one point they wanted him to break the streak, and he said no. Like, he refused to do it.
It's something as well. It's a, like Scott was saying, stop start. The sort of parallels with, because I'll use anyway, you get The Rock on a show. The sort of parallels with, like, the way The Rock, like, when he won, him and Mankind flip-flopped over the title, and then he was, like, champion for a little month, and then Austin took it, and didn't get near the belt again. And this was sort of like Edge. Got it for 3 weeks, and then he got it for, like, 2 months, because he only got it because RVD got suspended. But he lost it back to Cena, because obviously, like, Rock being the secondary star, Edge was the secondary star in their eyes to Cena. And injuries and things hampered him, and he made the best of what he got. But this sort of December to April title run, this is when you've seen the true Edge. And I think if it wasn't for injury, I doubt it, but it would have been really good to see him hold the title for, like, when he cashed it in all the way to Mania. Like, if he wasn't injured, how would he avoid Taker in the meantime?
I think that would have been the ideal way, because I think they were going to write Taker off with injury anyway, because he was
the Mark Henry,
because of Mark Henry.
He didn't return to Unforgiven that year, and he fought Mark Henry in just like 10 minute squash,
and we did get a great Cali world title run as a result as well.
We slate Kane from time to time, but I mean, Kane was number one contender at that point and scheduled to win it, and you're just thinking, you had Kane, he can still move.
I think Edge actually revealed on a podcast as well, like, he was originally meant to win the WrestleMania 23 Money in the Bank ladder match, and that he would just hold the briefcase until then, but when they shifted it to Mr. Kennedy and then he got written off, that's how they were able to get the briefcase to Edge. So they kind of recovered it, but I think maybe the suddenness of it, I think that maybe that's what really helped with it. Maybe the sort of injuries as well were a bit of a blessing in disguise, but...
We talk about Edge's streak. This was sort of like a jinx for him, because then he lost the next year to Cena and Big Show, and then he lost the next year.
He didn't win again in 27.
He lost to Big Show. They were talking about that. It's the only time he's walked in and out as world champion at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And deservedly so.
Yeah. And for the rest of 2008, right up until SummerSlam, you know, they had a couple other matches when the world title was actually vacated because The Undertaker's Hell's Gate was deemed illegal.
That annoyed me, because it was like, it was the pay-per-view before TLC.
Yeah.
They vacated it, and then I think he won again. But it was like...
What was Extreme Rules, yeah, but it was a TLC match, yeah.
No, so they vacated it after, like, Backlash, and they said the vacant title will be decided at Judgment Day. I think then he won again.
He won, like, count-out, yeah.
Then he won again, like, no, you can't win that way. And they took it, and they're just trying to prolong it, like Zed, to get to this TLC
just
match.
Just drag it out a bit, yeah.
And once again, it was like Edge avoiding Taker any way he can.
And this time he had Vicky Guerrero to help him as well, as the GM.
La Familia as well. Who remembers Bad Neely as well?
Only you.
This was, like, during my, like, hiatus for wrestling, because, like, after WrestleMania 24, I stopped watching for a wee bit. And, like, it came back years later, and it was just like, Who'll be can is looking well. I did not know who it was.
Yeah, they ended up having the Hell in a Cell match at SummerSlam that year. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say it was one of the best Hell in a Cell matches ever because of the it was basically a giant spot fest. But
didn't they just change it over to the PG, or was that?
I think they'd just gone PG at that point. Yeah. Do you, Andy? Do you remember?
I didn't actually see it because, like I said, I went on hiatus as well and stopped watching wrestling. But I remember the end of the match. But if anybody wants to talk about the actual match itself,
because Edge was all like, he was told right before, because he had all these spots they wanted to do, and they told actually were PG. Like, well, how can we do all the stuff we want to do if it's PG? Like, because Edge wanted to go on top of the cell and was told no.
Yeah. But I think they sort of made up for it with this, you know, the spear through the cage, the table spots, ladder spots.
And let's not forget, they got here because Edge messed with, cheated on Vicky with Alicia Fox, the last notable thing Alicia Fox ever did. The last notable thing she ever did. Why is she still here?
Don't you dare talk about the captain of the women's division like that.
The queen of the Northern Lights suplex. That as well, like, now we talked about how he avoided him for a year, and then at WrestleMania it was like, well, you can't avoid the Reaper forever. I think he had his meal ticket in Vicky Guerrero, who was helping him avoid Undertaker in like any strenuous way, and then when he ruined that, that was like the woman scorned. It was the best way to get back at him. Like, I've shielded you for the Undertaker. I suspended it, because he was suspended at this point. This was how they wrote him off TV.
Right.
Oh, sorry, they fired him because he lost the TLC match.
Yeah,
because
he was written off with injury.
Yeah, he was written off with injury, and it's like, right, you've hurt me. I'm going to hurt you the way I know it hurt you, and it's to put you in a match much like WrestleMania 24, where you can't escape Taker.
Yeah. One more stat for that feud. Actually, it's I think it might be the first or second year that the main event of WrestleMania was also the main event of SummerSlam.
I think it's happened twice, but it's the first time.
Yeah. The same two guys main evented SummerSlam the same year.
It was Roman and Brock. She was
Roman and Brock was the second one, yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's the first half of our Undertaker Greatest Rivals. When we come back, we'll get some fan input as well, see what they have to say. But as we go into this break, as we discuss the Hell in a Cell match itself, this is the promo leading up to the Undertaker Edge match at SummerSlam 2008. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Simon Cassidy, and you're listening to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
I wanted to apologize publicly to my wife, Victoria.
I know that what I did was horrible.
Nothing means more to me than your love.
I can't live without your love.
Oh, baby, I mean, I understand. But you need to understand that hell hath no fury over a woman scorned. I did something that you might not like. I reinstated The Undertaker. And at SummerSlam, it will be you, Hell in a Cell.
Undertaker. Every time I close my eyes, that's all I see. And I've found the one person that can help me thrive in Hell in a Cell. Mick Foley. There's something that lingers inside you, something that eats away at you more than our past ever could. That your body has felt that match every waking second. I know it eats away at your heart. Mick, if you help me, maybe it'll all just wash away. Not only will I not help you, I can't help you, but I know the one person who can. Edge. You need to look inside your heart and find the Edge who made me say you were the greatest superstar in WWE. You
bring this Edge to SummerSlam, and The Undertaker will tear you apart. Am I understood?
I understand.
Undertaker! Come on, Undertaker! Strike me down with your lightning, Undertaker! Make the lights go out, Undertaker!
And just hit his own best man!
What's the matter, Vicky? Is it finally dawning on you that the person you need to worry about isn't the Undertaker?
The Conchero! Is it Snap?
You want to put me in a hell in a cell with the Undertaker? This is the Edge that needs to step in the hell in a cell with the Undertaker. The Undertaker wants to take me down. Well, I'm gonna pull the Undertaker down to hell with me. Vicky, I'm going to take you down to hell with me!
This is the high-flying, death-defying, mass sensation, Lucha DS, and you're listening to Eat, Sleep, Simplex, Retweet.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Welcome back to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. My name is David Hockney. I am joined by Ross Scott, Alan, Andy, and Kwaku. And today we're discussing Undertaker's greatest rivalries. This is part three of our Undertaker series. We've also discussed gimmick matches in the streak, which you can listen to in our back catalogue. Be sure to find us on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, and all good podcasting sites. Also, I'd like to give a big shout out to Simon Cassidy and to Lucha DS for their soundbites this week. The interviews are out now, so be sure to find them also on our back catalogue. Give them a listen and give them a review.
5 stars only, please.
5 stars only, yeah, exactly. And it's also Simon's interview is also hosted by Alan, so be sure to give
love
him some
you,
love.
Simon.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not as if the host for Lucha DS is sitting across for you, is it?
And Scott hosted Lucha DS, so
just bear because Scott's a challenger.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Now we have had some listener input for this show as well to ask the listeners what they think was the best Undertaker feud. John McFarlane says feuds with Edge and Mankind are the two which stand out. Sean Smith says,
"Woo! Oh yes, Sean am I."
Who?
Sean Smith says,
"Oh, Sean Smith. I actually know Sean Smith." I'm sorry, Sean.
Oh, Andy, you're disappointing yourself here.
I've not seen him in about a year.
He says, "Edge, Shawn Michaels, and Triple H, Mankind, CM Punk, Batista, and of course you can't forget Kane." So
yes,
he basically said everyone on our list.
Yeah, pretty much. That. Yeah.
Did you leak the list?
No, not at all. But he has mentioned somebody else as well. King Mabel.
Yes.
Otherwise known as Viscera.
Good lad.
Gary.
There you go, Gary. Viscera reference for you.
We want Mabel.
He said Mabel and then tagged me and Gary in it.
Yeah.
Sean, I used to like you, brother.
I still like you, Sean. You're welcome anytime.
Dan Mikey Parker says Brock Lesnar and Shawn Michaels. Blaine Branham says Mankind. Kane, Lesnar, Cena, and Mr. Kennedy.
Canada.
Thank you. Dan's also said Batista and Edge as well in a separate comment.
Damn.
Stephen Lardner says Mankind, HBK, Lesnar, and Edge. JW Fall says Shawn Michaels, Orton, Edge, and CM Punk. Liam Berry, who's written a bloody essay here.
excuse Liam for taking the time to contribute and listen to the show.
Liam, we love your input.
A lot of detail about why his favourite feud is actually Brock Lesnar.
Tell me why.
There's Dave cost us a listener.
Well, Liam says his favourite feud is Brock Lesnar because it felt it had a legit fight feel about it because it was one of Taker's most difficult feuds. Mm-hmm.
You seem to won all the time.
And just to finish on a high for the champ, Callum Berry says nothing gives me goosebumps more than Undertaker and Kane squaring up to each other.
Yes, you're my boy, Callum.
Moving on to the next feud, the one that Liam described as a bit of an uphill struggle for the Undertaker, Brock Lesnar.
Yes, this one's for Liam.
Yep.
So he says it's an uphill struggle, but Lesnar won all the time.
Well, the one with
Undertaker
won. That was it.
Yeah, that was like 10 years after.
See, that's the thing about everybody we have in our list. Brock Lesnar's the only one where Undertaker has more losses than wins against.
Yeah.
Every other feud he's had, he's always had more wins.
Brock Lesnar's jobby gums.
What?
He's what?
He's jobby gums. He's bad breath.
What?
What?
Have you never heard that phrase? Jobby gums.
How old are you? Have you seen his teeth?
Yes.
Shocking.
Look,
pedigree. Right.
Let's get away from gums for a minute. Now, their first feud was in 2002. It was Brock Lesnar's rookie year. He had just won the WWE Championship. And would you believe it? Their first match is inside Hell in a Cell. Like, oh, Ross, do you think...
What?
What's
the match is at Unforgiven the month before.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's right.
Mark it down.
Yeah, mark it down.
The match before it ended in a double DQ.
Their first match at Unforgiven ended in a double DQ. But then it goes into Hell in a Cell. So,
That is a... By the way, that match... It's a great match, but see the ending? The visual of this big gorilla standing on top of the cage holding
it
the
It legitimised Brock Lesnar as a top player.
Because he'd beaten Hogan and Flair and Rock and he'd demolished the Hardy Boys. But this felt like you're beating the Undertaker in Undertaker's match.
Mm-hmm. You talk about violent Hell in a Cell, that's it. Because was it Taker went with a broken hand as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was everyone was bloodied. Even Paul Heyman was bloodied. Yeah. And he was on the outside of the bloody ring. Outside the cell, sorry.
Taker, when he bladed, he think he cut a tiny hole in Tommy's head and the blood was coming out of him.
He almost ruptured an artery, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, and... forgot my point. You talk about your turn, I think we talked about this in the Brock Lesnar episode. You talk about the definition to the two of strapping the rocket to somebody. And that's Brock Lesnar, and I don't think anybody in that room this time did more for Lesnar by putting him over than The Undertaker.
Aye, definitely, yeah. Alan, Brock Lesnar's your favourite superstar, as we all know. What did you make of his sort of initial sort of rookie years? The fact that he's getting thrown in with The Undertaker so soon?
It shows the trust McMahon had in him. Back then, he was legit. No if, no buts. He was, the guy. He was definitely the one to take over from the likes of Rock and Austin, Triple H, his injuries and so forth. So, yeah, and he delivered. In all fairness, back then he actually did deliver, and it shows when he's fighting the angle. Taker beat Taker in his own matches, Andy mentioned. It shows he was the right choice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it kind of makes it feel like a bit of deflating when the next year they had the biker chain match. I mean, does anybody really remember?
I remember the aftermath of it, but I can't actually remember the match itself.
See, I wasn't on a hiatus at this point, but I used to live in Kirkton Flats, and this was back before, in the days before you could get Sky and Virgin Media and all that in high flats. So we had On Digital, which is how old I am.
Council Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and it just wasn't even Wi-Fi. It was basically Freeview.
It's the old NTL.
Yeah, it's the old
NTL.
Yeah, so it's On Digital, but then it became Freeview, and it took all the wrestling channels away. So I was sort of an infrequent viewer. It was just a case of whatever. Sky One had it, but then they took Sky One away.
Swines.
Was that at No Mercy, the bigger chain match?
Yeah,
because it might have been on Skybox Office. I don't think I ever saw that.
Yeah, it was one of those ones. I lost my WWE access unless my grandfather taped it, or I was staying at a relatives or a friend's who had the luxury of Sky.
Yeah, that's the odd thing. It's usually it was usually the big four or something that were on box office, but all the other pay per views were just on Sky Sports.
Yeah.
Ah, the good old. It was all the ones that were on Channel 4 that ended up going on to Skybox Office.
But yeah, they didn't feud again until 11 years later, where it was probably the most infamous 1v1 match they ever had. And probably
I had Sky at this point.
Yeah.
And we were all older and had friends.
Arguably the most shocking moment in WrestleMania history. The streak is over.
No one saw it coming because it was that build-up was shocking. It was just Undertaker's just going to go in and then the match itself was shocking.
It wasn't even Undertaker needs an opponent, it was Lesnar needs an opponent because was it Lesnar didn't go into the Rumble because he was fighting Big Show at that Royal Rumble.
We just smacked him in the chest.
And then he didn't show up to, he wasn't at Elimination Chamber, and then he said the next night that he wants a main event feud. If he doesn't get the title, he's not facing anyone. He signed a contract, and unless the WWE champion signs it, he's not facing anyone. And then Undertaker came out and stabbed him with a pen. We're meant to be in a PG era, and you just hear it's Brock Lesnar's as he gets stabbed with a
pen. Call.
As he gets trademark Alan Marcus making call. As he gets stabbed with a pen.
What was that again?
Candy Ross impersonation.
That's when he's no,
I know, are they killing seals in there?
It sounds like after.
This is the first Eat Sleep Suplex retweet show that you've tuned into in our back catalogue. Please stick with us.
Yeah, it stabs him with a pen for no reason, and then this is how unexpected this was, right? So it hits the third F5, but we're like, it's Undertaker at WrestleMania. Like, it's getting kicked. That's maybe actually why it was a good thing the streak ended, because we were going, oh, it's getting predictable now. And I was sitting, sort of, I had to turn to talk to my mates where I was sitting, and like, ignore it. One, two, it's kind of three, what? So I actually, I looked away, I heard that, I was listening to it on the radio, I looked away, going, he's kicking it, one, three, what?
The sound of silence was just echoing.
I had it spoiled.
Just a story about how we nearly, have you told how we nearly missed that? Because the telly went
off. Yes, it was freezing in my mate's house and we went to turn the heating on. And he accidentally turned off Sky Box Office, which...
We were
10 minutes behind, so thankfully we missed John Cena Bray Wyatt.
They did have a couple more matches the following year. Like, Undertaker didn't resurface until SummerSlam the next year, and then they went on to have a second Hell in a Cell. The SummerSlam match was under sort of dubious circumstances, because...
It's a good match, but it's the finish is a bit wonky.
Yeah.
Don't kind of remember
from it. It was clear when Taker tapped out, but I think it was just to get Taker one win at least over Lesnar.
And the only thing I remember from that match is just when Taker sits up and then Lesnar sits up. And it's the
that should be the gif we use to promote this show. That is such a good.
Yes. Oh. Undertaker debuted a new finisher doing this, the punt to the balls.
Yes.
The Nakamura's, identical.
And Daniel Bryan's as well.
Yeah, in fairness, that is a good strategy. Like, you can't beat Lesnar, kick him in the balls.
Aye. But yeah, that was Undertaker and Lesnar for you. Quite a highlight filled feud there. Now,
that was a bang and ended in a whimper.
Yeah. But going on to one of the greatest of all time now, Shawn Michaels. Yeah. Where should we start with the Shawn Michaels feud, Andy?
Well, a 97, as you put it down on the sheet.
Shawn Michaels' mum and dad had sex and then had him and created the greatest wrestler of all time.
In the beginning, Dave.
And that was where we're starting.
What is the sex you talk about?
When a man loves a woman.
When a man.
It doesn't have to be that specific. We're an open society.
This is true, but that's just how we procreate.
No. Anyways, essentially, they were in the company for how long before that? Because this is the first match, isn't it?
I think Shawn Michaels better. For like 10 years at least, and Taker was around 7.
Can I just say, see this match?
Yeah.
It starts the 97 SummerSlam. This starts the Attitude Era for me, because it sets up so many things that are important to the Attitude Era.
Mm-hmm.
It gets Bret Hart the title, which he kept to Survivor Series, which sets up the screw job.
Yeah.
It sets Shawn Michaels up as the major heel, also costing Taker, starts the match at Hell in a Cell, and we'll talk about who debuted in that match a wee bit later.
I can see Scott's chomping at the bit.
Yes. So it led to the screw job, it led to the first ever Hell in a Cell, it led to the debut of Kane, we'll just say it, you know who it is.
That's gotta be Kane!
Spoilers, Ross, Jesus!
And it led to a HBK Undertaker feud. Yeah. And it's so many things just set in motion for the Attitude Era.
Yeah, the Attitude Era definitely was sort of born that night. Scott, if we go on to the sort of the first Hell in a Cell match, was there anything apart from Kane's debut that you remember from that match?
Jerry Lawler going mental as Shawn starts falling off the cage shouting, "I'm coming!"
Oh, yeah,
and Shawn wearing the proverbial crimson mask throughout that match.
Because, there was a table spot outside, wasn't there, but it wasn't like off the roof. It was like off the wall.
He was trying to climb away from him, and Taker was essentially kicking his hands, and he fell. Yeah. Like the Ambrose Rollins spot from like.
That's the spot they usually go with there with the PG and stuff, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, try not to kill people to see
what happens. Unless you're Shane.
Unless you're Shane, yeah.
Have you seen Mick Foley try to walk now?
I've seen him live, and it's
is that
not
the sort
nice.
Of thing with Shane? It's just sort of like, if I kill a performer, it's bad. If it's my own son, it's like, well, he offered to do that.
Yeah,
he's sacrificing his son.
The insurance will still pay.
Going from the Hell in a Cell, they also had the casket match where, unfortunately, HBK suffered that career-ending back injury. Do you think, Alan? Do you think if HBK hadn't suffered that injury, do you think we would have got more matches between the two of them?
definitely. Absolutely. I feel back then, I know Austin had a big push, but he wasn't really the guy yet. They two, I think, were really carrying the company, and they really took the company and ran with it, especially after, the screw job. And I feel that we could have had like a Rock Austin styled feud that went on and on for years and years to come. And it's a shame because, again, I think that possibly could have killed the Monday Night Wars early, I feel. Mm-hmm.
As well as much as Sean probably didn't feel like at the time when his back was in excruciating pain, he probably needed this because in real life he was not in a good place, so no. He needed to go away for a while and kind of like needed to get better, and he came back and had one of the best runs he's grew in the second half, which we'll get to one a couple of those matches, but also kind of benefited those around him because like Austin got that moment right before he left and it allowed Triple H to step into Sean's shoes as the head of DX.
Don't know, I feel like it was a blessing in disguise, that injury, because it was like, as you said, it was like Mike was in a bad place. I know you said the matches would have had, but and it could have ended the Monday Night Wars like earlier. I don't know, I think it did the opposite of the hand. I think it might have ruined the attitude there, because it's like he's in a bad place, probably trying to politic his way into like a top show, and he didn't like The Rock for a start. Yeah, so that's
not like The Rock.
And Rock, that's like upset Ross already. You know,
the second biggest Rock fan in the podcast.
Yes,
Sean was not smelling what he was cooking.
So I think that injury had to happen. Just because him out of the picture, it just people could come in and like do it. Like Triple H could have been on top before, but
as well, like with Shawn Michaels, you've seen the tragic end of so many wrestlers who. Not being able to control their addictions, I think this was the best thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You could have seen Sean go down an unfortunate path.
Yeah, talk about blessings in disguise as well, because he got obviously got on the right path. But then the next time they would have 1v1s, it would be two WrestleMania in a row, 25 and 26. These have been argued as some of the best matches in not just either men's career, but also in WrestleMania history. Ross, do you think one was better than the other, or do you think they were both just as good as each other?
Sort of a cop-out answer here, but I think everyone would agree 25 is the better match. Mm-hmm. However, 26 is the better story because it's the desperate man, Shawn Michaels.
Against the streak,
And because he was sort of like, he was in debt, quotation marks, even though he's the highest paid performer in the company other than Undertaker. He was working for JBL in that silly storyline, and then he just randomly won a Fatal 4-Way to fight the Undertaker. And then it was just like, I'm going to beat the Undertaker. The streak will survive. No, I'm going
to
beat the Undertaker.
Did he not just beat Kozlov to face Taker?
Yeah, I think he won a Fatal 4-Way, and then he had to beat JBL, and then he had to beat Kozlov, and it was just like, that was keeping the feud going, but they were on different shows, and it wasn't a WrestleMania building feud, if you get me. But the match was certainly WrestleMania quality.
Absolutely.
And then 26 the next year, where it's like, he says it at the Slammies in December, and Taker says no. So then he says, move me to SmackDown, and Raw tell him no. He tries to win the Rumble, he fails, and then he gets that desperate that he went, I don't want the title. He went, I just want you. He went, that's why I cost you the world title. And I think that it didn't devalue the title. I think it just built this feud up more, just in case of, I didn't want the title, I wanted you.
Yeah, completely.
That's a hell of a promo package, that WrestleMania 26.
Also, the way 25 ended, it just sell that story perfectly, because the whole idea is Michaels makes one mistake and he's caught, and that's it.
It's great, the moonsault into Tombstone.
Superb, and you're talking, Michaels is what, 40 odds then? Mm-hmm. And Taker's in his 40s. Mm-hmm. And these two guys are running about in their 20s, early 20s. It just shows how fit and how good they are.
It's as well, it's the one mistake, but they also referenced how he lost the Royal Rumble a few years earlier to Undertaker. Mm. It was one mistake then, it's one mistake is all it takes, and it's the promo package where Triple H goes, Sean, there'll be other matches, and he goes, not for me. Mm-hmm. There's not other matches, and it's just that shows you how much it meant to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On paper, 25 is the classic, these two guys are big stars, we don't have anything for them, let's put them together. I think part of the thing that aided them in that nobody could tell, because they knew they'd had a match where they couldn't predict how good this would be, and considering like they'd just seen a world earlier in the night, like Jimmy Snuka and Roddy Piper fighting Chris Jericho, so I don't think they were prepared for how good this would be. But I think I agree with Ross, the story that was told to go coming out of it, they took what could just be a one off, like that was a good match, to and one of the best stories they've done in the last 5-10 years.
Yeah, totally. And you said it was like, some people give give nowadays the fans give like a lot of criticism to like old part timers taking up WrestleMania spots, but ironic how two guys in their 40s were actually had arguably the best WrestleMania match of all time.
This was sort of like the Rock Hogan thing where it was like it was so good but you weren't prepared for how good it was going to be. Or like Triple H Undertaker in the years to come. You're like, that should have main evented, but it's just like you didn't realise how good it was going to be, and it made the main event just go, crap, we need to follow that.
Yeah.
What it was like before, it was like the last time they fought was like pre Michael's injury where he was in a bad place and stuff, and it's like, and all that time had passed, it was like separated, and it was the streaks becoming a big thing. You know, Michael's is always, he's the one of the greatest wrestlers, put him in with anybody, and Undertaker's on the SmackDown side doing the same, and it's like, but as soon as it was announced, it was like, you know, going in, this is like going to be a great match, and then, you know, it exceeded expectations.
Yeah. And one of the marquee points about all of those great matches, each of them lasted at least 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just goes to show, you know, they always steal the show when they go one on one.
I've always said to people who maybe don't like wrestling, if you watch those two matches and say you don't like wrestling, there's something wrong with you, because they have got something in there for everyone.
Commentary on the WrestleMania 25 one, by the way, is brilliant. Michael Cole gets a lot of stick, but Michael Cole plays off Jerry Lawler, who plays off JR, who plays off Michael Cole, and it's the only time the three commentary, because not one of them was out and out heel, they were just commentators.
Yeah. So rounding off our list of rivals, Scott, I'm going to put you on the spot here, because we're going to discuss Kane now.
It's got to be Kane.
It's got to be Kane.
Enoch. Vincent McMahon is not a good commentator. We all know that. But his best call by far
he's
is all this
right.
One.
I think he's quite good.
I thought he's
maybe back in the day he was actually quite good. But
no, he wasn't.
Yeah, back
what a manoeuvre!
You know, he was good.
He always oversold. He always knew someone going to go, there you go.
That's his job, is to oversell.
What a manoeuvre.
You think he was trying to challenge Edward Barrow and Alba back in the day?
Oh, God. God knows what he was trying to do. He had five different voices.
He was like, this is a big match coming up!
Michael Mann, forget about it!
Can we focus on Kane?
Sorry, Dave!
Sorry, Dave! My part is the Kane debut, because, well, it's come at the whole like, aesthetic of Kane. Like, I think everybody knew who this was, and if they didn't, they had Vince yelling at them. But yeah, like, what can you say? Possibly this and Jericho up there for me is the two best debuts of all time.
Yeah, definitely. Now, they would actually go on to have quite a few pretty crazy matches in the sort of late 90s. You know, we had the WrestleMania 14 match.
Yeah.
Andy, what did you think of that match there?
Well, which one? The WrestleMania 14?
14, aye.
It's a great match. It's a great sort of... It's probably the best Kane and Undertaker match. And even though Undertaker wins... But Kane still looks strong, and that's kind of how you...
It was like three tombstones or something.
Yeah, three tombstones, and Kane's still kind of standing afterwards. But it's still like... They both came out of it better than what they did. Afterwards, I don't know, like, no offence, Scott, but I just feel like their feuds didn't get as hot as then. Yeah. It was just, you know...
Talking of a hot feud, they did have an Inferno match.
Good segue.
I think this at the time, and I think this is what made the likes of when Triple H started to rise, he, even though he was a heel, got a lot of support. The Rock, when he was heel, still got support. Mankind gets such a big babyface reaction, was round about this time, and while people glorify the Attitude Era, something they always moan about in the Ruthless Aggression / PG era, it was always Triple H, Randy Orton, John Cena, Triple H, Randy Orton, John Cena. As Scott coughs and I party back. We have Kane, Undertaker, Austin. Kane, Undertaker, Austin. Kane, and it was always like...
Remind me of that rotation.
Kane, Undertaker, Austin. Right, Kane.
I just didn't get after the four times.
Dust anyone? No. But it seemed to be...
Little Brit reference now.
It would be like a Kane, Undertaker match, and then it'd be a Kane, Austin match, and it'd be an Undertaker, Austin match.
And it'd be like, whose side is he on?
Yeah, and then...
Every week.
We talk about Big Show turning face and heel constantly. It was like, Undertaker's with Kane. Undertaker's turned on Kane. Kane's with Austin. Kane's turned on Austin. Austin's helping the Undertaker. Austin's turned on the Undertaker.
You talk about, like, I know you've not mentioned the notes here, but Breakdown 98, what a match, because the stipulation was Kane and Undertaker were prohibited from pinning each other.
Yeah.
So they had to take it Austin, and the way it ended with, you know, no champion, because the two of them had the three count on them.
Yeah.
You know, and that match, it was brilliant, because obviously, as you see, they had, like, every triple threat match, obviously, they have somebody gang up, and then it all goes one-on-one and one sort of thing. But the storytelling that just made Kane look so superior, I felt, to Undertaker.
Yeah.
That whole thing, because it was Kane that was doing the real destruction, and it was Taker. We kind of do it if we'd be awesome, get a cheap dig in at Kane or something like that, and he would take him, but he never really carried the match. Kane carried that match, and for a lot of Fury carried, I felt, Taker as well.
I'm able to admit that post-Mania 14, it quickly went downhill. Even the very next month, they suddenly realised we need to keep this going, and they're already going in. This is Russo going to his bag of gimmicks. He's like, what do we need? These two guys, Supernatural, let's have them set each other on fire. And just since then, all the ridiculous reasons they've had, excuses they've had for feuding, which never really make any sense.
Yeah, like, you know, they had the Buried Alive segment as well, that they play heavily with that.
Kane just came out and felt like burying his brother.
Right.
We've all been there.
2010. This has got dark.
Whose side is he on?
Sorry. Yeah. Speaking of Buried Alive...
That's gotta be Scott.
2003, you know, Kane buries The Undertaker alive, and then that builds up their feud for WrestleMania 20. Do you think the build-up for this was better than, say, WrestleMania 14?
No.
No.
I don't know. I did really enjoy that build-up, because of the whole sort of come back to the, you know, the dead man character.
Oh, yeah, because that was the end of his biker gimmick, wasn't it?
This feud was essentially just a vehicle to, we need to get him out of the biker thing back to the dead man. How do you do it? We just went back to the well and got Kane.
Because that Royal Rumble spot's quite class when it's like, Kane's in the ring dominating, and it's like countdown, it's like dong.
Yeah.
Who's it? Is it Spike Dudley?
Spike Dudley.
Still in the Rumble.
Yeah.
But that WrestleMania entrance, though, I mean, him coming out as the dead man once again.
Well, Paul Bearer for a start coming out with the urn.
Yeah, that was
like, yeah.
I think that was probably the best part of that match.
It was the last match of that WrestleMania there, if we look back.
Yeah.
Can't talk about them.
It was the first time, I think, Taker's faced the same opponent at two different manias.
Yeah.
But then they sort of reignited the feud over the World Heavyweight Championship some years later in 2010. So Kane had just won his cash-in match by winning the same night. But then they go into a storyline where Undertaker's written off, and they go into this series of matches, all stipulation matches as well. Scott, what did you make of this feud?
This feud was terrible. Like, fair dude, I'm all for Kane getting the world title, and... Yeah, this is a few times where Kane actually won a feud. He won all three matches. I think it was just too little too late. When you think about it.
But you know what I mean? They had No Holds Barred. They had a Hell in a Cell match, finally. And even had their own Buried Alive match. Do you think they just lived up to the hype, or do you think the gimmicks themselves were just selling it?
Nah, they were just relying on the gimmicks. And also, Kane cut this promo that revealed my attachment. Oh, I had all these years of plan. Like, in the past 20-odd years, he's beaten you an umpteen times. Your plan is not very good. This is where it's all coming to.
Alan, do you remember this 2010 feud at all?
Not really, no. It was the end of 2010. I sort of came back out of my hiatus, so don't know much about it. When I started watching WWE again, Kane was the world champion, and the very first show I watched was a SmackDown. The Edge beat him for the title. And the fans.
Oh no, that was his rematch. He'd lost it at TLC.
That's the very first match, though, that time.
He'd lost it at TLC, and then
that was it.
The thing with Kane here, and it's something we talked about early Undertaker, and then round about 2004 to 2007 Undertaker. It was Kane never got the proper feud, because Kane can go. We all know Kane can go.
But
he's 50. Jesus. You try moving like Kane at 40 now in your mid 20s. I doubt you'll be able to do it. But anyway, back on.
I need
track.
A beer as well. So,
but he goes. He always get the bad villain of the week. Basically, like Undertaker would get the guy they were pushing. Kane would get the guy they were thinking of pushing before giving him to Undertaker, and he always gets stupid reasons for feuding with people. And it's just like, this.
Do you think this is about coffee?
Yeah, he feuded with Chris Jericho over coffee. And it was just, if you'd have gave Kane, with the talent that was on SmackDown at that time, you know, you had a debuting Del Rio, you had Rey Mysterio, you had Chris Masters, who was told he was getting a push and had actually slimmed down and was actually moving pretty well, and you could have made Kane this big monster, but they just kind of went back to the Undertaker.
Was he already a monster to begin with?
Not really, because they kind of just taken the luster away from him, and it was just a case of, let's go back to the Undertaker. Well,
You could easily have been that kind of like monster of the month or whatever, like Taker was feeling with it at that time.
monster of the month, like a wall on the wall, like Sam. An employee of the month or something.
Mask Kane, October 2010. Unmask Kane, November 2010.
I think with Taker, like, there was few people of the same size as Taker that had, at least they had better matches than he had with most big guys like fucking Giant Gonzalez and all that. Look, but at least Kane's feud had mostly, for better or worse, had a story behind it. They had that. They were brothers in quotation marks.
That's what the good thing about it was. I think if you put them together, either as a tag team or in a feud, you've already got a story there.
Yeah, much better as a tag team than the words.
And they could match rivals. Each other. Mm-hmm. Match will meet it.
Yeah, they could match each other actually. But the stats say otherwise because they have 13 one-on-one counters. And Undertaker's won 9 of them.
Jesus Christ.
So
all that's all in the actual, most of that's in the actual.
And then what the funny thing is, Kane won 4 times. 3 of those were in 2010 because he won the feud. Like it was a clean sweep.
Like 13, that's just far too many matches between those two.
Yeah,
this is, sorry, before we move on, this to me is like the John Cena Randy Orton feud sort of thing. Or like it's sort of like they try to build it up as an epic thing, even though although Cena's great and Orton's great, they've never meshed together. It's no shame, like AJ Styles couldn't mesh with Kevin Owens.
Yeah,
they're still great. Kane and Undertaker, they had that one great match and then they just try to rebuild it and it couldn't happen. And it's no shame in saying, look, you just don't mesh as be a team.
So yeah, that was some of Undertaker's greatest rivalries. But now I'm going to hand it over to the panel now to get sort of a definitive answer. And we'll have a bit of leeway with reasons why you think your choice was the best feud. But we do have some honourable mentions beforehand. Like, I think some of the listeners mentioned this as well. CM Punk, Randy Orton. We also had Diesel, Psycho Sid, Jake the Snake Roberts, Yokozuna. A couple of names just floating around there, but I'll start with Ross and we'll go our way around. Ross, who would you say is Undertaker's best rival?
Shawn Michaels, I'll go.
Okay.
Pardon me.
Wow.
I think...
Elaborate, yeah.
The fact that they were thrown together at WrestleMania 25, and then the fact that Shawn Michaels went through hell on earth to get to fight Taker, the only thing I think would have been better... is if Shawn Michaels, because I think he finished fourth in that Rumble, if he came in at number one, I think that would have made it much better, like going the distance and just crumbling at that last bit.
Yeah, he was fourth.
But the fact that he tried to get him at Slammies, he wouldn't get it. He tried to get a trade to SmackDown, Terry Long's like, I can't take you. Like, Raw won't let me take you. He eventually interfered. He went to a SmackDown main event and cost the Undertaker the title. And it's even better the wee nuance that Chris Jericho, his most fierce rival 2 years before, someone who attacked his wife and all that, he helped him win a world title because he wanted Undertaker that bad. And I think that just sums up how good that feud is.
Scott, dare I ask?
I have a couple of other mentions first. I was talking about this with my podcast co-host Paul earlier today. We joked that in the last couple of years, his two most fierce rivals have been his hairline and his hip. Where is Mabel on this? Have you not seen what Mabel did to the Undertaker after he broke his orbital bone, forcing him to wear that bloody Phantom of the Opera mask?
Yeah, I do remember that actually, but
I'm tempted to say Kane, but like I said, after we discussed, like, they've had one good match. I don't think that really makes up for everything that came after it, so I'm stuck between either Shawn or possibly somebody who we've not really talked about, as I normally mention on this sheet, Randy Orton, because I think before the streak became a thing, he was one of the first guys to say, I need to beat The Undertaker at Mania, because he was the legend killer and this was the ultimate person for him to go up against.
Yeah, they're very good. Yeah, Alan?
I think for quality of matches, HBK.
Mm-hmm.
I think for what made him a main event player, it's got to be Mankind. Made him really well known.
I'm sorry, Andy, I'm sorry.
At least we agree. But okay, I give one honourable mention.
Yeah.
The Rock. He had a cracking feud with The Rock. And also the fact that he was never afraid. He was the guy who put Brock over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because The Rock was starting to come up. And Vince says, right, he's going over. And it was Taker that turned around and said, no, he's going over cleanly. Because he wanted it to be a screw job. And he said, no, he's going to pin me. He's going to do it 1, 2, 3. Make him legit. He's your guy. And he did that several times. You know, just with the likes of Rock. He did it with Orton, so many others.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, They're my two.
Okay, and Andy?
Well, literally, Alan just took the word straight out of my mouth.
Sorry, friend. Sorry.
So, yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. In terms of match quality, HBK, but in terms of storyline, Mankind. Because they both just brought out the better
great
in each
minds,
other.
Mate. Yeah,
that's it.
Quacko, do you have a favourite feud?
Probably Randy Orton was up there, because that was around WrestleMania 21. And I loved that WrestleMania.
That's when you started watching, wasn't it? Was it your favourite Mania?
It was one of my favourite Mania. Like, is that our 17? That kept, I mean, it's 6.5 dozen to me, kind of. It depends on what you're looking for. But an honorary mention is to Mr. Kennedy, purely for that moment on SmackDown.
Kennedy! What moment was that again, Quacko? Can you
don't go there.
Well, I can't break him again.
If you want to hear the moment Quacko's talking about, listen to our Greatest SmackDown Moments show, and you'll see exactly why it's his favourite moment. So, but yeah, it's quite a good mix we've got from the panel here. We've had a couple for Shawn Michaels, a couple for Randy Orton, we've had Mankind, and we've had The Rock. So yeah, quite a good input from not only the listeners but also us here on the panel. I think if I was to chip in and sort of give my own opinion, whilst everybody makes excellent points, I think Randy Orton's was kind of underrated a bit. I think I've still got to go with I've got to go with Shawn Michaels, largely because they feuded in the Attitude Era, they feuded towards the end of his career. The WrestleMania matches were some of the best you could probably ask for. And
the majority was Mankind, because only one person said Shawn Michaels.
Well, a lot of the listeners
said Shawn Michaels as well.
Well, a lot of the listeners said Shawn Michaels as well, so that was... I think Shawn Michaels sort of wins the popular vote overall. But that's going to do it for our Undertaker Greatest Rivalry show. Next week, Andy, you're going to be in the hosting chair for the first time ever.
Way to spoil the surprise, Dave.
Yep.
He's going to knock it apart. He's smash it.
And it's going to be a big show next week because we're discussing the big show.
Well, it's the big show.
So if you enjoyed this week's show, be sure to leave us a rating and review, 5 stars preferably. Be sure to follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Suplex Retweet. Big thanks to my panel, Ross.
Thank you.
Scott.
Thank you.
Alan.
Thank you.
Andy.
Just for having us, Dave.
And of course to our MVEP Quacko.
Glad I go to bed.
Yes, you can. That's been the Undertaker Greatest Rivalry Show. This has been Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. I've been David Hockney, and we'll see you next week.
Listen, cunts, I don't care what the fuck you think you're doing, whatever you think is more important with your life, you honking bag of tips. You know what you should be doing? You should be going online, you should be subscribing, you should be listening to the back catalogue of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, whatever the fuck you're doing, that's what you should be doing. I don't care if it's your mum's birthday, I don't care if she's feeling contractions, get on it right now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.